Aleph. We're in the middle of the Malika story. Okay, let's start Pasuk Yud Dalet again. Just start there quickly. Okay, the Pasuk says like this. First we're learning about a person bringing a cattle as a carbon, and if that they were poorer than that, then they brought a sheep as a carbon. And now the third thing that we started learning already was Vin Min Ha'ev Kabanei. What happened if they bring a bird, because they can't afford even a sheep. They have to bring from a turtle doves or young doves. Okay? This we learned already. The Kohen brings it closer to the Mizbeach. And he does Malika, what's called nipping the head. And the Gemara discusses exactly how that was done. It was a very interesting process, by the way, of doing Malika. The Kohen... No, there's no pictures. Not in this one. But they have here. They have the description how the Kohen did Malika. Now we learned last time like this. The Kohen had a very big nail, very sharp nail. And Shechita normally is, you go from the front of the neck, and you cut the two signs, the food pipe and windpipe, and then if you cut the majority of it, that's a kosher Shechita. Here was the opposite. The Kohen went from the back. And with the nail, he actually went through the back and cut the windpipe and food pipe, but with his nail from the back. Now, normally, if that's done in a regular case of Shechita, it would be treif. The Torah says, this is the way it has to be done. We'll soon discuss why the Torah wanted Malika by the bird to be done this way, rather than any other way. Okay? It represents the poor person. It's very interesting with the explanations. So the case was like this. He held 2 feet of the bird with the bottom, the feet of the bird he held with the pinky and the finger next to it. Okay? The next 2 fingers he held the 2 wings. I don't know how he did it. But the Gemara says Malika was the most difficult, one of the most difficult things in the Beis HaMikdash to do. The Gemara says physically it was just a very, very difficult process to do this Malika. And then, like this, when you shecht an animal, the front is what's facing you, because you need to shecht it, right? Here, the back is up. In other words, the back is facing you and the head of the animal is down. By shechita, the head of the animal is up and you shecht the neck. Here, it was much the opposite. The head was down, the neck was open in the back, and he did like this. With his nail, he went behind in the back of the neck, and he cuts with his nail the seam on him. And he says, this is when Achas Avedus HaKoshes B'Migdash. This is one of the most difficult jobs in the Beis HaMikdash, because you need to do it a proper way. And last week we discussed, did the head come off or not? The head came off. Okay? In the Malika process, he says, Meisit HaRosh Min HaGuf, the head was removed from the body, and then he squirted the blood on the Mizbeach. Okay, now, why did Hashem tell, by the Korban of an Eif, to do Malika this way? What does Hashem care if you shecht it like a normal Korban? Why did Hashem say no? So the reason is because a poor man, she didn't even walk in, she closed the door.
It's noisy outside, you want a little quiet.
It's always inside.
It's a different excuse this time.
Invalid excuse. So it says like this. A poor person is very subdued. A poor person always walks with his head down. Right? A rich man walks with his head up. You know, everybody sees a head. But a poor man, he walks with his head down because he's like shy and ashamed and embarrassed or whatever. So what shows by him? The neck. So when the poor man's korban is brought, the bird, Hashem says, you know what? Your korban, we're going to shecht from the neck. In the back of the neck. Because then, it resembles the poverty and the poor and the subduness and the bittul of the poor person. That's why Hashem said to do it.
This holding the bird upside down by the legs and the wings, Everything with the right hand, I'm assuming? Everything?
Everything with the right hand.
And still, with the thumb, it goes to the back, to the back of the bird.
Correct.
Is this all done with one hand?
Yeah, looks like it.
Probably have to have the long nail.
One finger and a very long nail. That means he held one part of the bird with the tooth, with the thumb and the finger next to it. He held the other part of the bird with these two fingers. And with the middle finger, he actually did the malika.
No.
What do you mean no?
The malika is the thumb.
Who said?
He's a Cohen. Thumb nail.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not going to...
It's war with the Cohen. This is the strongest.
Cohen.
Biggest nail. You're practicing?
Ah, yes. 1 second. Shh. 1 second. Let's see. Here. Yeah, you know what? You're right. The Kohen. 1 second. Hello. Look. The Kohen cuts with his right thumbnail through the back of the bird's neck, towards the front, through the, both the windpipe and the esophagus. The cutting of both of the pipes is essential for the validity of the bird ola. Okay, then the blood is poured onto the mizbeach. Now, but if it's an interesting thing, the Mefarshim explained, if you look at the Chumash, now here he says, okay, the Mefarshim point out an interesting thing. You look in Pasuk Yud before, it said, Imenatzen Korbonai, right? In before that it says, Takrivu es Korbanchem, okay? Here it says, by the bird, Korbonai Lahashem. And it's interesting, the Mefarshim point out, before by tzain, it doesn't say korbanei lahashem. It says if he brings a sheep as a korban, this is the law. It doesn't say lahashem. Only by the poor people's korban does the pasuk use the term lahashem. And the Medrash learns from here that Hashem enjoys the poor man's korban because this is called korban tashem rather than his own korban, because this is more precious tashem. Now, the Mefarshim point out like this. In Pasuk Tezvav, it says, V'kriva akein al mizbeach. He brings it to the mizbeach. Umbalak asay, she does the malika. V'hikta mizbeach, and he puts it on the mizbeach. V'nimtza damai, and he presses out the blood, al-kira mizbeach, on the wall of the mizbeach. But the other korbanos, it says he received the blood, and then he squirted the blood on the mizbeach. Here, there's no squirting on the Mizbeach. Why not? And first, it's a very practical concept. This blood of a chicken is very minimal. If you can accept it in the Keli, you're not going to have anything to be able to squirt on the Mizbeach. So therefore, the Torah says, rather than accepting the blood and then squirting it on the Mizbeach, you took the blood straight from the bird, straight onto the Mizbeach. Right, they're tiny. It had to be young. Even the doves were young. So therefore, what happened like this? The Kohen went up onto the Mizbeach. There was a ledge around the Mizbeach called the Seviv. The Kohen stood on that Seviv. Soviv. There was a ledge that surrounded the Mizbeach. And then, he did the Malika on that Seviv. Because if you look in the Pasuk, what does the Pasuk say? V'kriv ha'kein al Mizbeach. He brings it up to the Mizbeach. Then the Torah says, Umalak Esreshay. Then you cut off the head. Okay? The other shechitas were not done on the Mizbeach. The other slaughtering of the animals was not done on the Mizbeach. This was mamash done, first of all, practically speaking, this is the only bird that, the only shechting that could be done on the Mizbeach. You can't slap an animal onto the small ledge that was a foot and a half to 2 feet and shecht the korban there. But here the Torah says the Malika had to be right near the Mizbeach, because one of the reasons, simply because he had to squirt the blood right onto the Mizbeach. So he had to do it right away. Okay, then he says like this, Ve'isus Murasi ben Eitzosa, he takes the crop with the feathers, the Hishlich Eitz Eitzah Mizbeach came, and you put it next to the Mizbeach on the east inside, Al-Makem Adosha, where the garbage was. And as we learned like this, and this we discussed a little bit last week, birds, their stomachs are not so kosher. Why? Because birds are not fed. Birds fly around and get food wherever they want. It's stolen food. Animals, domestic animals that you bring your carbon from, so over there, the owners feed the carbon, feed the animal. So all the Torah says is, wash it off, make it clean for Hashem, and bring that on the Mizbeach. Here, Hashem doesn't want the stomach thrown on the Mizbeach because it's stolen goods. So therefore, what does Hashem want you to do?
Doesn't have anything to do with to be kosher or not kosher.
No, it's the kosher bird.
No, but the food. I'm talking about the food.
Birds don't have to eat kosher food. You can feed a bird tray for food. You think all the dog food is Lubavitch Shechita? Dog food is not Lubavitch Shechita. The only thing you can't have is meat and milk. Because meat and milk you're not allowed to benefit from. But if you have tray for meat, you can give a dog tray for meat. The only problem is it's stolen. So even though animals are not obligated in the midst of not stealing, right? Because the Eibishter made it, that's the way birds survive. But Hashem says for the Mizbech, I don't want stolen goods. So therefore, this stomach you throw like where the ashes is. So the Mefarshim ask an interesting question. If that's the case, then the whole bird is fed from stolen goods. So how could you bring the whole bird? The bird eats, right? He eats stolen food. What happened? That's how you get the meat of the bird and the flesh of the bird and everything. So how come Hashem likes that on the Mizbech? The stomach, not because it has stolen food in it, but the whole bird is sustaining itself from stolen food. So the answer very simply. There's a din by stealing. If the stolen goods are present, you have to give back the goods as is. If the stolen goods were changed, they're made different, changed into a different thing, then you have to give back money, not the object itself. Okay? In other words, what happens if I stole wood? I still have the wood, I have to give back the wood. But if I made it into a table and I changed the shape of it and the size of it and everything and made a table, because it was Kena with Shinui Maisa, changing the action, so therefore you don't have to give it back. So the Mefarsh explained like this. The food in the stomach that's still in the present state, that's stolen. When that becomes the meat and the flesh of the bird, that already changed. So that already, the person acquired it. So that Hashem says, that I don't care if it gets burnt on the Mizbeach. But not the actual food which is in the stomach itself. So therefore Hashem doesn't care about the bird. Okay. V'shisa eisei b'chnafav. And then the next process was like this. The Kayin split the bird with his bare hands, lo yavdu, but he doesn't separate it. Meaning like this. What happened was, he takes the bird at its wings. Okay, the bird has two wings. He bends it back to break, he breaks it. He actually breaks the bird. But, it goes down. He breaks the bird, but he doesn't cut the meat is still there.
Oh, after the spritz.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then vehikter eitzer kena mizbeach, and the kohen brings it on the mizbeach. Alo eitzer mesher al eish, on the wood which is on the fire. Elo, it's a burnt offering. Yishereach nicheach l'Hashem, a satisfying smell to Hashem. And here it's another interesting thing. Rashi quotes in the Gemara that by the big fat animal it says reach nicheach l'Hashem. By the poor man's sacrifice, it says, Rech nechech l'Hashem, it's a good smell to Hashem. Hashem says, Echad amarba, v'echad amamit, I don't care if you bring a lot, I don't care if you bring a little, as long as you have the proper intent. Not only that, we learned, and we're going to learn it even more by the next carbon, a flower offering, that Hashem likes a poor man's carbon even better than the rich man's carbon. But somebody shouldn't think that because they're not able to give a lot and to give a little bit, Hashem doesn't accept it. Not only does Hashem accept it as much as the rich man's big donation, but in certain respect, it's even greater. And that's a very important lesson b'chlal in life. By the way, it's not only with giving money. Okay? If somebody gives, there's an English expression that a true gift is a part of oneself. You know, rings and jewelry, it's all nice, Baba Maisa gifts. The real gift is a part of oneself. When a person gives himself. A person, let's say, has only 5 minutes a day to learn. That's all they have. And they learn for 5 minutes. That 5 minutes, very possibly by Hashem, is more valuable than somebody that has, let's say, 5 hours to learn and they only learn 3 hours. Even though this guy's learning 3 hours and this guy's learning 5 minutes, but this 5 minutes is holier than this person's 3 hours. This is a very important concept that the Torah is teaching us. In fact, we just learned this Shabbos morning in Tanya also. The Altarebbe speaks about a remarkable concept. It's to do with Yiddishkeit and everything in life. To understand this concept, we're going to learn even more by the flower offering where the Torah uses the word v'nefesh ki sakriv. Over there, the Torah uses the expression a soul will bring a carbon. And the Medrash says, what does it mean, nefesh? Rashi says in the Medrash, when a poor person brings a little lousy amount of flour, tiny flour, this is more valuable by Hashem as if he brought his own soul. As if he brought his own nefesh, his own entire being, he brought to Hashem. The Maamar brings down an interesting story. There was once a lady, very poor lady, brought a little carbon, a little bit of flour. Now, that's all she had. She brought a tiny amount, not even the amount that the Torah says here to bring. She had a very tiny amount of flour. She's very poor. She brought a tiny amount of flour. The Kohen, I think it was even the Kohen God, the Kohen said, lady, I'm not bringing this carbon. There's nothing here. There's nothing here. The Kohenim are not going to have anything to eat. You know, this is their food. We're not going to have anything to eat. I'm not bringing it. That night, the Kohen had a dream. Hashem came to him and the dream started screaming at him. This poor lady's carbon is more precious to me than the big fat animals that everybody brings, and you have the chutzpah not to take it. Okay. To understand this concept, we can understand it by what the Rebbe explains in Tanya Perek Tezvav. It's a remarkable concept. There's a Gemara that quotes a pasuk. V'shavtem ur'isem bein tzadik l'rasha bein eved l'kim l'asher l'yavadi. It's a pasuk that says the following. Return and see the difference between a tzaddik and a rasha, between one that serves God and one that doesn't. That's what the pasuk says. When you look at the pasuk simply, literally, the pasuk is defining a tzaddik and a rasha. Look at the difference between a tzaddik and a rasha, one that serves Hashem and one that doesn't serve Hashem. That's the simple understanding of the pasuk. But Torah doesn't have redundancy. Torah doesn't repeat itself. So obviously, when the Torah says, look at the difference between a tzaddik and a rasha, one that serves Hashem and one that doesn't, we're talking about four people. And the Rebbe explains, what does it mean? There's a tzaddik and a rasha, and then there's two levels of the beinoni. A beinoni is a guy that has a yetzer hara, but doesn't sin. Doesn't sin at all, never. You sin once, you're a rasha. Beinoni doesn't sin at all. Not in thought, not speech and action. Why isn't he a tzaddik? Because he stores the yetzer hara, a tzaddik doesn't. Okay, let's not get into that now. What is Beinoni doesn't sin at all. The Torah says, and this is what the Pasuk is saying, there's two Beinonis. Again, a Beinoni never sins. Okay? That means he does everything right and doesn't do anything wrong. There's a Beinoni that's called Eved Elokim. There's a Beinoni that's called one who serves God. And there's a Beinoni that's called not serving God. So the Altareb explains, how can you have a guy that doesn't sin, not in thought, not in speech, not in action, and yet the Torah says, you're not serving God. Lo yavadei. How could that be? So the Gemara over there, let me first explain what the Altareb says, and then we'll bring down the Moshe that the Altareb brings down from the Gemara Chagiga. The Altareb explains like this, paraphrasing and elaborating on it a little bit. Hashem is infinite. Given, if not, we might as well get out of here. God is infinite. We, believe it or not, even though we think we're God, but we're still finite. Maybe a finite God, but we're still finite. There's no way limited can reach unlimited. It's impossible for finite to reach infinite. So how could we ever reach God? So the answer is, Dr. Rebbe explains in Tanya, this is what the Pasuk is saying. When you break your nature, which is, by the way, the most difficult thing for a person to do, is to break your nature, even though it's still finite, but on your level, you reach the infinite. Because you broke your limitations, your nature, your barrier. Okay, and the Gemara over there gives an analogy of a donkey rental. They didn't have enterprise in those days. They're donkey rentals. Okay?
But they would pick you up on the donkey.
Yeah. Now, they deliver you to anyway, so it says, to go 10 miles, they charge one zuz. To go 10 miles, they charge one zuz. To go 11 miles, they charge two. L'cher, they should have charged $1.10, not $2. So in our language, we know it's called overtime. When people do overtime, you get paid time and a half, double, you're supposed to get paid. I don't know what the bosses do, but that's what you're supposed to get. You're supposed to get paid more. Why? L'cher, you work an hour, you get $50 an hour. So you work overtime, you get $100 an hour. Why? You work an hour, you should get $50. Why do you get more for overtime? Because that's beyond your natural work day. You work 9 to 5, you want to work to 6. That last hour is very difficult. Where do we see this in our practical life? In a classroom. Teacher teaches the kids 9 to 12, no problem. Well, not no problem, but they can handle it. The bell rings at 12 o'clock. From 12, to keep the kids in a minute later is harder than the entire 3 hours. Okay, why it's only 1 minute? The answer is, the kids are not used to sitting an extra minute. And to do something we're not accustomed to is extremely difficult. The hardest thing for a human being to do, by the way, is to change your nature. It's the hardest thing for a human being to do.
So we get rewards for that too.
1 second. Now, when a rich man gives a carbon, he's not breaking himself. He has money. You know, you can have a very, very wealthy man and give millions of dollars to tzedakah. And you know what? I'm not going to say it's worthless. For the institution, it's worth a lot. Between him and God, it's worthless. Why is it worthless? There was no breaking. It's extra money.
If it's stingy by nature...
1 second. If a guy is stingy by nature and gives it, yeah, that's breaking your nature. But I'm saying when a guy has to bring a carbon, okay, he's bringing an expensive carbon. He's not hurting by it. Mm-hmm. He doesn't get hurt.
He's not breaking his nature.
Right. You know, they tell a story. A rich guy died. He came up to heaven, to court, and they said, you're going to hell, Gehenim. He says, 1 minute, I'll give you a big check. I'll give you a big check. This is a miser, never gave money in his life. So he came up to heaven. Heaven said, you didn't give any tzedakah, you're going to Gehenim. He said, no, 1 minute, I'll give you a check. So in heaven they said to him, Baichik, here we don't take checks, here we only take receipts. How much you gave, the receipts. You come with your receipts. That's what's going to let you into Gan Eden. Checks are not going to get you into Gan Eden. You know what I mean? What it means is that when a rich man gives a korban, the Torah says it's wonderful. Outside it looks wonderful. Big, fat, juicy behemoth or a sheep or whatever it is. It looks wonderful. But you know what? It's not you. You didn't bring the korban. When the poor man brings a korban and he has nothing, and he brings his last morsel of flour, and God says, you know what? Now you brought yourself. You're right. If the guy's stingy and he breaks himself, you're right. Then he brought himself.
When it hurts.
In other words, you know a guy's doing the mitzvah tzedakah properly? When it hurts.
Exactly.
Not when it's convenient.
When it hurts.
Yeah. When it hurts. Then you know the person is really giving a part of himself. And it's like that, by the way. Well, not only money. We always talk of money. But the truth is, helping somebody out. If you have spare time and you're bored and you help somebody out, it's not giving. You're looking for what to do. You might be a nice volunteer. You have something better to do. No. Of course, instead of sitting at home looking out the window, on a smoggy day, so you're a volunteer. I'm not saying no. It's a mitzvah to bring a korban. I'm talking about in the reaching the infinite. When a person is busy and they have other things to do for themselves, and instead they give that up to do somebody a favor in time or body helping, that's called bringing yourself. That's why even love, like we said, the English expression, it's a true gift, is a part of oneself. Mm-hmm. Whether the self is money, time, energy, whatever tzedakah is. Tzedakah is with your money, with your goof, with your neshama, whatever it is. Okay? If a person who enjoys, let's say, to learn in depth, and they really want to learn it, they would love to learn in depth. And then they'll go take a kid and learn them a simple pasuk in chumash. That's called tzedakah with your body and soul. That's called tzedakah because you could be accomplishing much, doing much more, and this is what you're doing instead. Then that's the accomplishment. Okay, let's start Pasuk Aleph, Perek Beis.
Can you ask a general question on the whole Kabbalah season? People tend entirely, there's a lot of things people like and the concepts or values they are very fond of. When it comes to the concept of karbanis, of taking the actual animal and slaughtering it and using the blood and sprinkling the blood and all these kind of
gross things, yeah.
So people tend to ask a very, from the question point, it's a very good question. Why did Hashem have to desire in such a specific, so to say, manner where it just so, just if you paint the picture, it doesn't look too exciting. It doesn't seem like something you would do inside of
it. Okay, we discussed that at great length at the beginning of Kabbalah.
Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm not going to go through it again. But there's no question that when Mashiach comes and the Beis Hamikdash will be rebuilt under, as Rambam says, we're going to go back and bring Kabbalah. PETA and all the animal rights groups are going to be lining up all around the country.
What was it?
Yeah, to give their
Kabbalah. To bring their
Kabbalah,
yeah.
Oh, they said it's going to be a vegetable Kabbalah.
Who said? The vegans?
Zucchini.
The vegans say.
No,
it's going to be behemoths and birds, and everybody's going to eat it. Except if it's an olam. Okay, the nefesh. Now he says again, like nefesh means a person. Kisakir of carbon mincha Hashem, if they'll bring a carbon mincha flour offering to Hashem, say, let's see, a kabbani should be from fine flour. V'yatzik alau shemen, you should put oil on it. V'nasin alau levena, and you put it on it, this, in English called frankincense, which is hardened sap of a tree. That's what the levena is. The Mefarshim explained it was a form of granules. It wasn't the sap of liquid. It was actually granules that were very, very fine. And we'll soon see what you do. Now, the Torah is speaking over here a few types of korbanos. Even the flower offering. There's certain flower offerings. This is the simplest one. We're going to see there's five types of flower offerings. Okay? The simplest is plain flour. Fine flour had to be fine flour. You couldn't give a carbon cheap stuff. And it said they would sift it and re-sift it and re-sift it until it became actually very, very fine flour.
It doesn't have to be the whole wheat.
Hmm?
It didn't have to be the whole wheat.
As long as it's fine flour. From wheat, by the way. It had to be wheat flour. It couldn't be barley flour. It couldn't be... See, Hashem wasn't allergic to wheat. So he didn't have a problem with it.
What is the solet? Like solet now? This is the meaning of solet?
Solet means fine flour, which was it was sifted very much. What they did was they opened it up in a way they took the kernels out and then they broke it in a way that is, there's a way of making the very fine flour, salus. There are different levels of flours. A flour. Fine flour was a much greater, more difficult process of making that flour.
Distilled five times, I guess that's how they call it.
Distilled five times is mashke. Okay, the yotzek olah Hashem, and you put oil on it. Now, oil had to be olive oil, but it didn't have to be shemen zayizach.
Extra virgin.
It didn't have to be extra virgin. No. For the menorah, it had to be extra virgin olive oil, only the first few drops. It's called extra virgin, meaning for the menorah, when they kindled the menorah, it had to be, the Torah says, clearly, shemen zayizach, it had to be, Rashi says, from the Gemara Menachos, only the first few drops. This was already, any olive oil was accepted. Now, how much, here, by the way, he says, by the way, how this was done. In the course of long involved process, this is how they made salus. You want to know how they made salus? Listen. The chaff was removed from the wheat kernels and the bran loosened. Then the kernels were ground roughly to split them. After being repeatedly sifted to remove any remaining bran and loose flour dust, the split kernels, which were known as solus, were high quality, were ground into solus flour that was used for the meal offerings. That's the way, so it was a nice, good kernels and good flour, and that's the way it actually became this flour. Now, how much flour was it? A tenth of an ephah. This is the minimal size. How much is an ephah? So Rashi says in Chumash, that in Parshas B'Shalach, Rashi says in Chumash, an ephah is 43.2 eggs. The size of 43.2 eggs. How much is an egg? Let's speak mamalushin, practical. An egg is 2 ounces. I mean, it ranges, here he says, from 86.4 ounces to 172 ounces. That's the variation. It's mamish double the size. But in practical halacha today, the way we hold, is an egg is 2 ounces.
So it's like
4 or 5 ounces. 43 eggs is 86.4 ounces. But that's an ephah.
Right.
A tenth of an ephah is much less. It's 4. If it's 43.2, it's 4.3 eggs. So like 10 ounces.
8.6 or 10, whatever.
Yeah, 8.6. It was close to 10 ounces, approximately 10 ounces of flour. How much oil?
About half a pound.
A little bit more than half a pound, which is not a lot, by the way.
No.
And the oil was the size of a leg. A leg is, But we have, you know, a Kiddush cup is called a Revius. A Revius is a quarter of a leg. So a leg is approximately 12 point something, let's say 12 ounces.
Four small Kiddush cups.
Four small Kiddush. The four cups of Pesach altogether. So therefore, when a person, the minimal size of the flour offering that a poor person brought was not a lot. It was like a half a pound of flour and 12 ounces of oil. That's basically what he brought. And here the Torah calls it nefesh. Like we said, the Hashem considers it as if he brought himself. Yes, sir.
Is this where you get how much?
Yes. Birthday boy.
Happy birthday.
Mazel tov.
Don't continue. Don't say you belong in the zoo. Because my kid did that in first grade, and the teacher threw him out of class.
Really?
Yeah, in first grade. Yeah.
So is this where we learn how much you have to bake for the challah?
That's it. That's right. Because Rashi says, "V'ha'emer asir sa'efa." That Rashi says in Parshas Bishalom, "V'zuhi shir challah."
No,
but you need three pounds. So, okay, without learning Hilchos Challah now. But this is the amount.
Where is the 5 pounds that it mentions?
It doesn't say 5 pounds. 5 pounds is definitely more than the shear. You're talking about a little bit over 3 pounds. How much is 3 pounds? Times three is 48. Right. No. And this is close to 48 ounces. 43.86. It's a little bit less. It depends on the amounts. Okay, anyway. So therefore, this is it. Now, what does the Kayan do? Bevia el b'nei adin ha-Kayanim. You bring this flower offering to the Kayanim. V'karmetz misham milei kumtza. And he does a kmitza. Now, the Gemara says about this kmitza, this was what also Rashi says, that just like Malika was one of the most difficult things in the Beis HaMikdash, kmitza was the most difficult thing. Kmitza was as follows. The Kohen, unless it was a big Kohen, a small Kohen, didn't matter. It was not a handful of flour. And the difficulty of it is to make it precise. There was a mixture of flour and oil, right? The Kohen puts his hand into the mixture, and he makes it three fingers full. It wasn't a handful, you take a handful, all 5 fingers. He took, with 5 fingers, with the thumb, he brushed off anything that was on top, and with the pinky at the bottom, he had to brush off anything that was at the bottom. That means a kmitza was exactly 3 fingers full. And what's also difficult about that, to make sure that there was no flour sticking out from this 3 fingers, that was a very difficult thing to do. So the whole korban of the poor person and the mizbeach was this little 3 fingers worth.
Just mixture.
Huh? Because
he had long fingers.
Or big fingers.
If
the Kohen had piano fingers, not piano fingers.
So if it is oil and flour, then it's not going to be sticking to the hand.
Sure it does.
No.
Okay, for homework next week, you have to make oil.
Unless you put some flour first.
Sure, it's very hard to stick away the flour if it's sticky with the oil.
It is sticky. It is sticky or not sticky?
It depends. If it is no water, it's oil and flour, and if it is not enough oil, it doesn't stick.
Okay. I won't give the men homework because they won't know what in the world they're doing. But if the women are bored, you come with the kmitza next week and we'll see. Yeah, bring the flour and the oil. One second. So, lepoil, and then the rest of the flour was eaten by the kayanim.
Just like that?
Well, they could do with it whatever they wanted. They could put chocolate cover on it. They could put
bake marshmallow.
They could cook it. What's left over the kayanim, they can eat it any way they want. The guy brought, the person brought a half a pound of flour. Okay, so now when it's mixed together, he takes only 3 fingers worth. So it's a very small percentage. Yeah.
So they were eating all day, basically.
They didn't have to eat on the job. They're able to go home for dinner and lunch.
To keep in the fridge.
But they were eating more than the normal person, probably.
That's why Kayanim were very sick. No, the Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara says Kayanim walked barefoot in the Beis HaMikdash with a stone floor. Okay? So in the Beis HaMikdash, Kayanim walked barefoot on a stone floor, ate a lot of meat, and therefore the Gemara says Kayanim had a lot of stomach problems. So there was a resident doctor in the Beis HaMikdash.
Dr. Cohen.
His resident doctor in the Beis HaMikdash.
Specialized in
Kayanim's stomach problems. A GI doctor.
Them and their family.
No.
Only for them?
Yeah. You mean if insurance covered the rest of the family? I don't know if their insurance covered. Oh, you're talking about the food of the doctor?
Yeah, the food.
I said you asked about the doctor. Does the doctor
no,
take...
No, I'm talking about whatever the
Kranim's immediate family was allowed to eat the food.
Okay, thank you. Makes sense.
Like even the korban, we'll learn. Like Truman, the korbanist, if even as a daughter, if she married a non-Korean, then she doesn't eat about the truma. Then you know the whole dinim. That we'll see later in Chumash. They could only sell it to another Korean. This was not allowed to be eaten by anybody but Kohanim.
And his family.
But if she's married a non-Korean.
In other words, one second. There are certain things that you gave to Kohanim and Levim that were not holy. Okay, like when you gave 10% to the Levi, tithing to the Levi, that stuff was not holy. The Levi could sell it, the Levi could eat it, the Levi could do with it whatever he wanted. But certain korbanis, certain gifts of the Kohen got 24 gifts. Chabdal Matnas Kun is called. A lot of those gifts, Kohenim were, it was not a holy thing, the Kohenim could do with it whatever they wanted. The korbanis were only allowed to be eaten by Kohenim and their immediate family. Sometimes the Torah says, Kol Zachar Bivnei Aaron Yechlena. Sometimes the Torah says, only the male Kohenim were allowed to eat it.
So it had to be eaten only within that day?
Or? If it was certain korbanos, it had to be eaten for a certain amount of time, correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you were talking about the Malika, you said that the bird paralleled the poor man who walked with his head down.
Right.
What about this, the three fingers?
I didn't see anywhere yet. I mean, I looked, but I didn't see anywhere yet what is the significance of the three fingers, but I'm sure it's mentioned somewhere. I don't know. Okay, so then the Torah says like this. You take the comments Misham Leikum say, okay, so he takes that, and then alcohol of Vainaisa, meaning like this. When the Kohen does the Kemitza, so where does this Frankenstein, whatever you call this stuff, frankincense, where does this Levaina come in? So much easier to say Levaina. So like this, when the Kohen did the Kemitza, there was only flour and oil in his hand. Then, the levain is to be collected later and burnt on the older altar together with the kaimitz. In other words, when they burn it on the mizbech to burn this kemitza, this handful of flour, so they sprinkled this levain on part of the flour, not all over it, they didn't have to cover all of it, and it was burnt on the mizbech. So in other words, there was like, the kemitza was only the flour and oil, and then they added the levaina when they burnt it on the mizbech, because that's what the Torah says clearly. V'hikter akenes has kedusa mizbech, and he burns it on the mizbech. Yishereich nicherech l'Hashem, and again it says this good smell to Hashem. V'aniseres min amincha, the leftover of the mincha la'arin ulvanov, kedush kadoshim ishe Hashem. And as the Mefarshim explain, when it says kedush kadoshim, was only allowed to be eaten by male kohanim inside the Beis HaMikdash. That means this flour offering, the wives were not allowed to eat, the daughters were not allowed to eat. It had to be eaten only by kohanim, male kohanim, inside the Mishkan, or inside the chatzar of the Mishkan, or when there was a Beis HaMikdash, in the actual Beis HaMikdash. So, they couldn't take it home. Like truma, all those things they were allowed to take home.
So,
one second. In davening we say, those that say it, before davening, in Ezel Mekayman, there's certain kabbanis, the Torah says, here, B'chor, Maiser, Pesach, firstborn animals that the Kohen gets, the tenth animal, you know, the tithing of the animals that the Kohen gets, Kochim Kalim, there were the lesser levels of holiness. And it says, okay? The b'chor, only kohenim were allowed to eat. The tenth animal, the tithing of animals, that every tenth animal went to the kohen, the Mishnah says, any Jew could eat it, not only a kohen. It was able to be eaten b'chol ha'ir, anywhere in Yerushalayim. Some of these things, for instance, Teidah ve'el ha'nazir, a Thanksgiving korban that we'll learn about later, is also Nacholim b'chol ha'ir l'chol adam l'yem v'layla chaseis. Any person was allowed to eat, not even a kohen. Any person was allowed to eat it. When the Torah says the expression by animals, kochi kadoshim, holy of holy animals, so a lot of them were like the carbon oil that was completely burnt. So nobody ate except the mizbeach. When the Torah says by eating carbon is kochi kadoshim, the Torah says in many places, the male kohanim, and only inside the Beis HaMikdash. What?
So it says about the flour. So it's meaning that it could never take flour home because that was the poor person, or it was never, it was always Kodesh Kodashim, the flour.
But the Torah is saying that even though they only brought a handful on the Mizbeach, the entire flour offering that they brought was holy. And that had to be eaten by male kohanim only inside the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, that's one type of a carbon. Now he says like this. The Torah had a baking facility. Okay? Now, there were, this to give an introduction to these types of the next coming up carbonis. There were chalais and there were kike matzis. If you see in Pasuk Dalet, it says, if you want to bring a meal offering that's baked in an oven, it should also be seilis, it should be fine flour. Chalais matzis blulis b'shem, unleavened loaves mixed with oil, or unleavened wafers smeared with oil. In a few psukim, the Torah is going to say the expression kol amincha. Later on in Pasuk Yudalev, the Torah says like this: any flour offering lo yiseyachei chametz is not allowed to be made chametz. Why? Ki chol se'ar v'chol devash, anything that's risen or anything that has honey, you cannot bring as a korban to Hashem. But in the matz itself, it's very interesting. There was this flour that the Torah calls chalis matzis blulis b'shemen. It was flour mixed with oil, like we said, but it was raised chalis, but it wasn't chametz. And they were puffed up, but it wasn't chametz. It didn't rise. That means they baked it within 18 minutes of when the flour and the mixed.
No
oil. Right. And the kiki matzis, the second part of the pasuk, those were flat matzis. And even today, you can have a cake that's not chametz. It's made with matzah milk, but that doesn't mean it's chametz. Okay, but the Torah clearly says no flour offering was allowed to be brought out of chametz. The logic behind it is very, very simple. Chametz symbolizes haughtiness. Chametz symbolizes evil. Hashem says, you want to bring a carbon? It's a sign of humility. Don't bring me any haughtiness, you know, blown up, rising things. But he says like this, there are two forms in which these meal offerings may be baked. Loaves are high and fluffy, but they're not allowed to become leavened. Wafers, the rekikim masses, are low and flat. Okay? Now, how much oil was it in Isarin? Like we said, that is the tenth of an ephah. And it was divided into 10 loaves. In other words, when they baked these breads, there was the half a pound of flour. That half a pound of flour was baked into 10 loaves, and that's the way they brought it as a carbon.
But whose carbon is that now?
The poor man's.
10 loaves, what would be it? Just like that?
Why? Half a pound is 8 ounces.
8 ounces?
No.
It's like 1 cup of flour.
You ever have a dinner roll?
Yeah.
Those round dinner rolls? That's the size of it. Of each one of the 10 loaves.
It won't be that way.
Each loaf is 8 ounces.
Yeah.
No, each loaf is more.
Each loaf, 8 ounces.
No. It's about close to 10 ounces of flour. This 10th of an ephah,
yeah,
which was the size of the flour. Okay, now that's number one without the oil mixed in.
Okay.
So when the oil mixes in, it becomes bigger. Okay, so let's say for argument's sake, it's 12 ounces. Okay? Now, if you have 12 ounces divided by 12 is 1.2 ounces. A kezayis, those rounds, not the big, the challah rolls, the little ones that you get at a wedding, no, that's 1 ounce. That's a kezayis. It's not. It's a kezayis.
Very small.
They're very small. So what? But it was a small carbon. I mean, it was a... But there were 10 challahs.
In 3 fingers.
By the way, just for the record, this thing, this dough, was not kneaded with the oil. I mean, K-N-E-D, you know, lush. It was kneaded with warm water, and then they added the oil. And the Gemara says, even though warm water makes dough rise quicker than cold water takes 18 minutes. Warm water makes it quicker, because the heat makes it rise quicker. But the Gemara says, Kainim Zerizim Heim, the Kainim were very zealous and quick in this, so the Kainim knew how to do it so quickly that the dough didn't even have a chance to rise, even though they kneaded the dough, the flour, with warm water, and then they added the oil.
You didn't say you can add the rice. How's it
going to
be as big as a dinner roll? You're
going to
have 10 of them out of half a pound.
Right.
Get to
rise.
No, there's fluffy ones and not fluffy ones.
Well, if they don't put water, it's not going to be bread.
But you didn't say you could have water. Are you just telling me right now?
I didn't finish the class yet. What do you mean telling you right now?
It's 9 o'clock.
It's 8:59. Oil and water, right?
No, that's the not-baked one. There was the non-baked flour offering, which is flour and oil. You know what? Maybe we'll go on a class trip. We should go on a class trip to a bakery and we'll have a tour.
More nice than at night.
Yeah, right.
It's like a matzah before the matzah.
It's true.
No, but the challah was high and fluffy, it says.
How?
How? 1 minute. And matzah, if you don't put...
It's hardly like this.
Rising doesn't mean... Let me ask you a question. How do you have chametz stick a matzah?
Okay, matzah you need like 18 minutes and then...
No. I'm asking you a question. Can you have chametz stick a matzah?